The iconic call of the loon is one you'll hear on lakes and ponds throughout the state. I'm Chris Martin from New Hampshire Audubon, and this is Something Wild. Today we're talking loons with John Cooley, who's the senior biologist with New Hampshire's Loon Preservation Committee. John, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Chris. Good morning.
So how many loons are we talking about in the state, and how many lakes have loons?
Last year, we had 211 nesting pairs of loons, and then there were another 78 pairs of loons that occupied a territory but didn't nest. And we're seeing about the same numbers this year, and that's on a little less than 200 lakes. We
wow.
have the bigger lakes like Winnipesaukee, Umbagog, and Squam have, you know, a dozen or more pairs of loons each. And then some of the lakes that you're familiar with from Eagle Work, like Bow Lake, may have several loon territories or pairs.
So they're all over the state.
From Little Island Pond down in Pelham, a few miles from the Massachusetts border, up to Third Connecticut Lake, which is a few miles from Canada. Yeah, they're really all in every corner.
To my eye, loons are pretty unique birds. I know they're really great swimmers and divers, but they don't do so well when they're on shore. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, loons are uniquely adapted to diving and catching fish and other aquatic prey, and they've evolved to have really dense bones and to have their feet and legs far back on their body. So they're not like a Canada goose that you'd see standing in the middle of a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
They're not even able to really move around on land, and they can't really stand on their feet.
Why do they ever even go on land?
They're only on land if they're nesting right at the water's edge, and they'll nest. They won't nest farther than a few feet from the water because it's so difficult for them to move on land. Or if they're injured, they'll beach themselves sometimes.
So I got to tell you a quick story. I know that loons have their challenges in terms of taking off from water because they're such heavy birds. But I saw something really interesting the other day. I was on the Connecticut River, and this loon is coming from the south, and it approached this 300-foot-tall set of power lines. And it was only, 200 feet above the water. And as it approached it, it veered off to one side, and it basically did like an entire go-around, about a mile in diameter, to gain some elevation to get over this power line. It was like watching a plane at an airport go a second time around before going onto the runway. It didn't just climb and go over the power line or dive and go under it. It had to do a complete loop.
Yes, they are sort of the B-52s of the avian world, and they've maxed out the ratio of wing surface area to body weight. So they can fly fast once they get going, but they're inefficient flyers. Their wing area is reduced because they don't use their wings underwater. They're useless for what they're doing most of the time.
So is that a way of saying that they can't stop flapping or they'll drop like a stone?
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
They might, when in migration, you know, they can hit 70, 80, 90 miles an hour and make it from Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico in, you know, less than a week. But for short flights, and just to get airborne and stay airborne, it's a lot of work. Their ideal lake is 100 acres, and they never need to take off. They can get everything they need there as far as a breeding site, a nesting site, and forage, a prey base.
Just a couple more facts about loons and their natural history do they eat anything besides fish?
Their preferred prey is a small, like, yellow perch, and they'll also eat lots of crayfish in some lakes, and for their young, especially some aquatic invertebrates like leeches or dragonfly, they'll go after those too.
Tell me, do you have any stories about seeing loons feeding food items to their chicks? It must be a tender scene out in a cove on a lake to see a loon with a little crayfish in its mouth trying to get the baby to eat it.
Yeah, one of the amazing things about loons is that they're they're conducting their whole lives right out in front of us. So from the end of your dock, you can watch this scene where an adult loon is feeding its chicks these tiny prey items, and the care that's required as the chicks are hatched and then within a few hours off the nest and bobbing around these little puffballs in the water is just amazing to see. Both adult loons will be foraging underwater and bringing those over to the chick and feeding them. Maybe the other adult is patrolling around looking for threats like another loon or a snapping turtle. But yeah, these minuscule items and lots of them, because the loon chick, when it's hatched, is only a few ounces and is gaining almost that much every day in the first few weeks as it's growing. There's lots of natural predators like snapping turtles or a big fish or a crow or a seagull or an eagle that can go after the chick when they're young. And we only see maybe three quarters of the chicks that are hatched survive to fledge at the end of the summer. Hmm.
I know that the lead sinker ban that went into effect recently is a good thing for loons, but can you tell us if you've seen any changes, or are there anything that's happened as a result of that legislation going into effect?
Well, you know, we're in the early days of realizing the benefits of the law that has taken full effect this year on June 1st. But the problem of lead mortality, you know, documenting that and discovering that has been the result of decades of research into what causes mortalities in loons in New Hampshire. What we've seen in the now 16 years since that initial ban is a slight drop in the number of mortalities that we're collecting that were caused by those split-shot sinkers. It's not a statistically significant drop yet, but it looks like we're headed in the right direction. And with the law that passed in 2013 and went into full effect this June, we're hoping that we'll, over the next 5 or 10 years, start to see the benefits of that. But it's slow going because it's going to take some time for people to clean out their tackle boxes and make the switch. The groundwork is being laid right now for the real benefit to loons.
Mm-hmm. And so your hope is that over the next 3, 5, 10 years, you see a trend towards decreasing lead mortality.
Yeah, lead mortality is the single biggest problem for loons in New Hampshire, and it's the single biggest factor in preventing the recovery of loons in New Hampshire, and it's also one of the easiest problems to solve. And it's going to take some work. It's going to take time before we can measure the benefits of this new law.
So lead aside, assuming that we're taking steps to deal with that, what are a couple of the other things that you consider threats to loon nesting success?
You know, at this point, besides lead mortality, climate change is definitely the biggest long-term concern. Loons are a northern species nesting and breeding at the southern edge of their range here in New Hampshire, and they nest right at the waterline, as we talked about. So they're vulnerable to any big rainstorm that raises the lake level a few inches that can flood a nest. And they're also coping with just tolerating the summer heat in New Hampshire as they nest and breed on our lakes. So we can see in our monitoring data over the last 40 years that a really hot summer correlates with lower nesting success for loons. And if you look at the predictions for what the climate will be like, the suitable climate for loons is likely to shift north over the next century entirely out of New Hampshire.
Wow. It's hard for me to wrap my brain around that, the idea that Golden Pond might be loonless in 100 years.
Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty with climate predictions.
Wow.
In general, that right, we know that it's changing. We know that it's going to be warmer and more variable, but how much it's going to change and what the impacts are going to be are still uncertain in terms of predicting, and also uncertain in terms of what we humans do to slow it down and stop climate change and also mitigate the impacts of it to wildlife species like loon. There are some more immediate threats to loons in New Hampshire that we are already managing for and are well aware of. And shoreline development is one of them. If we lose a nest site to somebody putting in a dock or a house along the shoreline, or just to the disturbance that comes with lots of human presence on the lake. And the Loon Preservation Committee has always been working to help loons and humans share the lake and to strike that balance.
We've talked about several things that are threatening or of concern to loons. Yet, at the same time, if I understood you correctly, the number of breeding pairs in the state is at a near or at an all-time high for the last 40 years. How do you connect those two?
So the Loon Preservation Committee was founded back in the 1970s to address the decline of loons in New Hampshire, and we've worked since then for the last 40 years towards the recovery of loons, managing the nest sites, floating loon nest rafts, doing outreach to people on the lakes. And in that time, those management efforts have helped to expand the population and bring it back towards what it would have been historically. Mm-hmm. 100, 200, 300 years ago. And it's a work in progress. We're probably something like halfway there towards our best estimates of carrying uh-huh. capacity in New Hampshire.
Uh-huh.
But it's been very slow going. You know, loons is a long-lived species, are slow to colonize their former habitat and to recover as a population. And so the breeding population in New Hampshire has more than tripled since the 1970s, but it's been this really gradual, incremental growth, and we're still, a long ways from what it should be.
Right, right. And so you're saying, in a sense, we started counting when the numbers were at a really low point, and the LPC has managed to take a population that was declining and reverse that and start growing it again.
This is one of the most intensively managed loon populations anywhere. You know, over half the chicks, loon chicks that were hatched in New Hampshire last year came from a territory that was managed with a rope and sign around the nest to keep people away, or a nest raft to buffer against those fluctuating water levels and shoreline predators, or where we're doing water level outreach with the operators of dams on impounded lakes. All the arsenal of tools that we have as managers, that accounted for over half of the loon chicks that were hatched last year.
Yeah. So, I don't speak loon, but I kind of suspect you do. And I have a question for you. If it's a warm summer night and I'm out on the dock, you know, after dark, and I'm checking out the stars, and I hear the loons hooting or calling from across the lake, what are they talking about?
They have a really fascinating and complex vocabulary.
Yeah.
And you can hear, if they're close by, you can hear them calling back and forth to contact their chick or their mate, and you might hear a little soft hoot. Or some softer sounds. The chick, when it's hungry, will peent a little bit and just make this little whistling sound. But then farther away across the lake at night, if you hear the long, lonesome wail of a
loon,
it's another contact call that the adult loon might use to find out where its mate is or let it know that it wants it to come back and take a turn sitting on the eggs.
Oh, interesting.
And also in the evening, sometimes on a bigger lake, you'll get that evening chorus of loons sounding off up and down the lake with tremolos, the crazy laugh of
yeah,
the loon.
Yeah,
that's another way to contact loons up and down the lake, also to signal alarm as a loon if you're getting too close to the young. You might elicit a tremolo from the adult loon that's tending them. So the loon calls that you're hearing at night are really the loon's version of a cocktail party out on the lake. And a lot of the behaviors that you see loons engaged in are just ways for them to carry on this social, very social existence over the many miles that can encompass a loon neighborhood.
Well, John, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us today and let us know a little bit more about the details of loons and their lives. It's been fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. It's always good to talk loon.
All right. That was John Cooley, senior biologist with the Loon Preservation Committee. I'm Chris Martin. Something Wild is a joint production of New Hampshire Audubon, the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, and NHPR. Sure. Testing, testing. How's the sound level? Is it what you want?
Perfect.
Is it?
Perfect, yes.
Okay. Whenever. Woo!